book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 3. And we're going to try to finish up chapter 3 and maybe go into a little bit of chapter 4, but I don't think we'll get very far into it if we do at all. And so you hadn't got any new material. We're going to be finishing up chapter 4, whatever we don't finish tonight, next week. And then next week I'll have some more material on chapter 5. When you start out chapter 3, for every purpose there's a what? A time. And you have that as opposites that are there in various ways that you look at. Time to mourn, time to weep, time to a time of birth, a time of death. All of those kind of things that you go through. What's the point of all of that? Don't everybody answer at once, but one at a time, please.
These are all things we're going to experience.
Okay.
And they all serve a purpose.
Okay. And even though they're the very opposites with regard to the things that take place, they're necessary for us to learn the full things of life. Now, when you put them all together, if you took all the... Go ahead, James.
Well, also, we don't necessarily experience every single one of these, but this a good way that God has helped us prepare for those things that may come.
Yeah. Yeah, those things are pretty much universal that are talked about, but it's the preparation of life and all of that. Now, when we experience these things, what do we understand? How does it help us to understand something in life? And what do we not understand? What do they not lead us to? Let's look at the first one. How does it help us in life? What is it that we're caused to understand by these various things all happening in this life? Opposites. Not one's a good thing. You want to do this and avoid that, but both of these will be there. What do we know? Go ahead.
Depends on the circumstances of the why you need to do this.
Okay. Go ahead.
That we're not in control.
All right. Okay. All those things are true. That you have that, it makes for the rounded nature of a person in recognizing the things of this life. Now, what do they not make us to understand? The things that are eternal. The things that have to do with God and His will. We can reason out that there's more that's involved in this world than just the things of this world. And that's the interlude that we talked about as we go through there in that point on number E, the 3, 1 through 22. This is the interludes that he's putting in there to say, in all of this, this isn't leading you to God or leading you to understand God's will, but it is causing you to understand that there must be something more than just this life. And that's what he's trying to get to through chapter 3 before he then goes down and finishes the rest of these things that are in vanity, and also more of an interlude this time with respect to chapter 5 to the approach of God with reverence and fear. And so you're moving in a direction. You understand through life that it's filled with all kinds of things, some that are absolute opposites, but they're a part of life. And they all tell us there's something more in this life when you look at it, but we don't know what that is. You don't go through suffering and come to understand the plan of salvation. You don't go through laughter and figure out what it is that is the very nature of God's holiness. You don't do that. It's not the things that are of this world that teach us about that. They tell us there's some purpose because man has that yearning, that eternal longing within his soul. That's a part of mankind. God made us with that. And that's how we're distinguished from the things of the animals. That even though many of these things happen to us, like they happen to the animals, still there's something else there. And so all of those things are being wrapped together, and we're moving toward then a suggestion of what we ought to do with our life. That's what we're going to get to in chapter 7 through 12. Now, here's where we left off last time. What profit has the worker from that in which he labors. I have seen the God-given task with which the sons of men are to be occupied. He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. Anybody got a point on what the main gist of that was that we talked about last time? If you look at everything that this world has, and you got to understand the various things from it with all of these experiences, would you necessarily understand how God did it? And would you necessarily understand the wisdom in God doing it? You can't. You can't know everything about this world. And that's the idea that's here. Except that no one, he's put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God does from the beginning to end. How did it happen? Why did it happen? What's the purpose of all of this? I don't live long enough to figure that out, for one thing. You occupy here 70 years, 80 years, 90. And have you seen much of things with regard to the whole of life that God has put here upon this earth? No. You experience the various different things. You're still lacking. You're not going to understand all of those things. What does that tell you? There's something beyond me. There's something that's wiser, and that's the idea of he has put eternity in their hearts. All of these things that we experience, the good and the bad, all of those things, they're beautiful in their time if we accept them for what they are and learn from them and become one who is exercised to seeing the things that are right in the sight of God. Now, here we go in a part of something. I wanted to make sure we had that background. I know that nothing is better for them. Excuse me. I'm having a hard time breathing right now with some of these things that have gone on the last few days. And so I might need to just stop and take a breath every now and then. I know that nothing is better for them than to rejoice and to do good in their lives. And also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. It is the gift of God. This isn't the first time that we've seen this, is it? What happens to a man who works hard, has this gain, and then he doesn't enjoy it? Doesn't enjoy any of the fruit of that labor? What's the purpose of him working?
Give it to somebody else.
Okay. And what had been already pointed out about that? Who might get it? Your son who's fooled. And so you have all of these kind of things that are there to point out, look, when you get these things, they're to be enjoyed. Have you ever known anybody that was greedy, a hoarder of money? Someone just grab, 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 trying to get more and more and more. I've seen a number of those in my lifetime. If you have, what are they like? They ever got enough? Why? Okay. And acquire more, what do you need to do? Spend more in that work, less in any kind of enjoyment of it. And then you think that's going to make you happy, yet it doesn't. So what do? It's a perpetual kind of thing that takes place. That when one is of greed, he's never going to be satisfied. And Solomon's going to talk about that a little bit more all through this book. Several times we'll come up with that. But that's the point. That's going to do no good. All right, now if you work and you enjoy the labor, the fruit of your labor, then what does that do for you? Do what? All right. It's had some pleasures there. You're happy for the moment. You enjoy these things. How long does that last? All right. You do that, and it's a temporal kind of a gain. It's better than just sitting there and acquiring, and doing nothing with it, a hoarding kind of an atmosphere or greed. But the idea is that doesn't answer your longing in life either. But when you look at life under the sun, that every man should eat, drink, and enjoy the good of all his labors, that is the gift of God. In other words, when you receive that out of the physical things, you've received what God intended you to receive. If I won't work, what does God say? Neither let him eat. There's a point that's tied between that. That labor is there so that we can partake of that labor and learn that there's good in that, but there's a limited amount of good. It's not a lasting, eternal good. It's only a limited kind of good. Everybody got that? Any comments right there? That's the paragraph that you need to keep in mind as we go to the next one. A lot of the translations put this paragraph and the next one together, and I think that's a better way of doing it, but I wanted to separate them out here like the New King James does in most of their places, so that we can look at that, have that established of what's being talked about. Go ahead.
I think it's important, I'm sure everybody knows it, but the labor and everything that goes with it, it's the gift of God. You didn't do this by yourself.
Correct.
That's correct.
Whatever he gave you of strength and everything else is from him. God gives you this. You have these things that are of the possessions, and you use them for good. You use them that you might have an enjoyment of that in life. That's a part of it. Now what? Verse 14. I know that whatever God does, it shall be forever. Nothing can be added to it and nothing taken from it. God does it that men should fear before him. That which is has already been, and what is to be is has already been. God requires an account of what is past. Now, when you look at that first sentence there, I know that whatever God does, it shall be forever. Nothing can be added to it. Any of you talk to a Calvinist and had them use that passage for once saved, always saved? If you haven't, they're not a very good Calvinist. They don't know their stuff. That's what many of them will use as passage. Look, when God does it, it's forever. God's perfect. He can't partially save you. He's got to wholly save you. And if you're able to be lost after that, then God's imperfect. Is that what's being talked about in this passage? What's the context? Is it talking about our eternal salvation that is the gift of God? All right, the physical things of this life, the enjoyment of what we have, the fruit of our labor. Now, when God has given that, okay, here, I'm going to give to man the ability to work. I'm going to give him that opportunity. He works, he gains. He's able to use that in this life to have an enjoyment out of it, or the various things there that are part of our life under the sun. When that's there, has it been done well? Could anybody have done it better? But it's still incomplete, is the point. When you look at this passage, many times you'll hear from, especially those who are Calvinistic, those who are hard shell Baptists, sometimes they'll say, or various other kinds of places like that, the Old Cumberland Presbyterian, all of those. Their concept is we turn to this passage and then we use it in that way. I've seen that with with the writings of Calvin and various other ones. This is one of their favorite passages. Now, if they just read that first verse and say, see, this has to do with our eternal salvation, that sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Well, not really, but I mean, it's a good argument as you'd make for false doctrine. Let me put it that way. But when you know the context, what does that help you do? That's not what this is talking about. I like to talk about sometimes, that isn't a 30-second cousin of what's been talked about in this passage. This passage is talking about life under the sun. God did it in exactly the way that was best for us in this life under the sun. to face us with all of these things, to give us something that is for the enjoyment of life. Now, what's the point? God does it. That men should what?
Fear.
Why fear before Him? When I understand that God's gift is that I receive the benefits of my labor, what do I understand in a kind of a very clear way? Is this all there is to it? Is this all life's about? If it is, then what's the point? Might as well give up. Vanity of vanity. All is vanity and vexation of spirit. That's what's caused him to do it. When I understand how life under the sun is and what good I can get out of my labor, all of these things that are there, there's just an enjoyment that's very small. And what I have to look to is say, well, why is that all there is? That's all there is in life, period. Why was I created? Why did God spend all of this time in doing the things that very clearly He spent great wisdom in bringing forth and great power? It makes us long to find out who is that God that we should fear, because there's something else out here. Mankind recognizes there is a need for justice, even though he does not many times seek after it very long. He recognizes there's something there with justice, and that's what we're going to notice in that last phrase, that whatever it is, God will require those things that are past of someone. Why? Because when I look and I see the evil that's done, I see the problems that are there, the injustice in this earth, and I see none of that's been made right in this life, what does that make me see? Somewhere that's got to be made right. Somewhere there's justice that's available. And that's what Solomon is talking about. That's so with God. In all of the things of this life, as we think through them, what it leads us to is to understand if this is all there is, life is hopeless. Therefore what? There has to be a God behind this, and there has to be something more. I have to have that eternity that I'm looking for to answer where the fullness of hope is, where the idea of justice is made perfect. All of that is something that reasons out with a human being having that ability to reason, that you recognize there's got to be something more. This is driving us or compelling us to understand that there's more involved with God. Jason, you had something. I might have gone too far.
I was just earlier, I was thinking about Acts 17:26, that God has put us in a set of parameters, circumstances for us to live our lives, things that we will encounter, situations for us to show
happily they should seek after God and find Him. He's not far from every one of us. As Paul talks to those on the Areopagus there in Athens, that's the point. He's trying to drive them toward understanding you need to look at the true God. And that's what Solomon is doing too. That life, though it doesn't give you the answers, a lot of times the more important thing than the answers are the questions. When we look for the answer to those questions, that's where we're going to benefit. And that's how it is that man does in his life under the sun. Anything else there? All right, let's look at this. Moreover, I saw under the sun, in the place of judgment, wickedness was there. And in the place of righteousness, iniquity was there. I said in my heart, God shall judge the righteous and the wicked, for there is a time there for every purpose and for every work. You notice as you look around this world that justice is not served? You don't have to look very far. If you watched the news tonight, you saw several examples of it, I'm sure. The fact of it is, here goes out people and doing all kinds of things that are illegal, everything else. And yet, they get off. It's always interesting to me. However guilty somebody is that's rich, he's judged not guilty because he's gone through all kinds of charades to get out of it many times. What do you see? Justice doesn't happen in this world many times. Now, I say it never happens, but the fact is most of the time you have less than true justice occurring in whatever it is. Why? Is that because of our system, that we've got the wrong kind of system here as a free people? It's not going to give us justice, so what we need is a communist dictator? Would that give us true justice? Okay. Whatever you have, I remember the statement from Winston Churchill that freedom, or as he called it, the idea of a democracy, is the worst kind of government that there is, except for all the others. And I thought, yeah, that's pretty right. You have that. Doesn't matter what kind of government. It's the fact that people are imperfect. Somewhere along the line, you come with an imperfect person who's going to stand in judgment. He's going to be bought off because he decides to go that direction. Or he's going to do something out of his own kind of a thoughts about that, which will pervert justice. Or on the other side of that, here are some poor people who decide we're going to suck it to the rich man. And so what happens is we'll sue them, and people in the jury think, well, they can afford to pay it. And so just sock them. It's not justice. Whether you're talking about perverting it from the one side or the other, doesn't matter. Who is alone to give final and complete justice? God. That's it. If that's what you're looking for, of waiting for a time of justice, then that time is coming with God. He's going to answer every purpose and every work that's there that's done. He's going to provide for justice. But at the same time you think about that, you long for that if what? If you're trying to do righteousness. You look at your life and try to make that which is the absolute best of what the principles of God are. If you're going through this life trying to rip everybody off, then what do you think?
You're glad there's not justice.
Yeah.
You hope there's not.
You're fearful of all of that and hoping that that doesn't come your way. But when we look at this world, every one of us understands that point, that sometimes where you look for justice, where you look for righteousness, you find iniquity, you find unrighteousness, you find ungodliness, unfairness. God, however, shall judge the righteous and the wicked. At that point, he's going to bring up again where? How does this book end? With that statement being there. Go ahead.
Well, we've always heard that life's not fair, and it's not.
Yeah.
But death is.
Yeah.
You live the life you're supposed to live, you're going to get judged either way, but you're going to get what you deserve.
Perfect justice will be dispensed before God. And if that's something where you're living in a way that's right with God, that's something that one longs for. But if you're not, you're hating that. But I'll tell you what it does to everyone who thinks about it. It makes them sober. Think about the only time some people think about justice and judgment is when they go to a funeral. That's why when I've done a funeral, I've always included Plan of Salvation in it, because that may be my only chance to talk to people about their eternal soul. And I'm going to keep doing that as long as God gives me breath. But the fact of it is, most of the time they're out there in the world and they aren't thinking about that. They may look at somebody else and see their injustice, but they don't see their own and what's there. What it should bring to us is that point that God will judge in the end. It's not going to be based on favoritism or anything else. It's true justice that God will dispense. All right. Anything else there? All right. Last part here of this chapter. I said in my heart concerning the conditions of the sons of men, God tests them, that they may see that they themselves are like animals. For what happens to the sons of men also happens to animals. One thing befalls them. As one dies, so dies the other. Surely, they all have one breath. Man has no advantage over animals, for all is vanity. All go to one place, all are from the dust, and all return to the dust. Who knows the spirit of the sons of men, which goes upward, and the spirit of the animal, which goes down to the earth? So I perceive that nothing is better than that a man should rejoice in his own works, for that is his heritage. For who can bring him to see what will happen after him? All right. That statement there. One thing happens to men and to animals alike. What does he say? Death. Can you notice a difference about the death of a person or the death of an animal just by watching the death? It happens the same way. I've seen animals die. I've seen people die. There's certain physiological things that happen. You recognize what takes place, and it's obvious. When an animal dies, it's obvious when a person dies. If you're looking at just life under the sun, things as they're happening in this life in this world, you look at either of them, you say, what's the difference? This breath that he talks about, there's three ways in which the term soul is used. In some senses, the word soul is talking about the eternal part of man. In some cases, the word soul talks about that which is the animating life of man. And then you have that sense of that spirit of a man that is his inner being, the sense of reason and all of that. You have all of those different words. All those different uses, pardon me, of that one word. And it's much like we do as well. The reason is because the word breath in the Old Testament and the word wind and the word soul or spirit are the same word in Hebrew. That's what makes it a little bit difficult at times. Hebrew is a language that's based upon idioms. You have to put it with other things, and it may mean that the same word may mean two very different things given the context of it. That's the way all Semitic languages are. It's made for poetry. But it's also something that's very difficult. Because when you start looking at it, which one is he talking about? Well, here, I think it's pretty easy to figure out the ones by the context. He says, you have these people, they die like animals. What happens to sons of men also happens to animals. Surely they all have what? One breath. That's what's sometimes called the breath of life. Back in the book of Genesis, with the creation, man breathed into his nostrils and he became a living soul. That idea is he breathed and they breathed. That's literally what you have. And so there's that sense of that word soul, or the idea of it. Man has no advantage over the animals. Their life is vain. Why? Just with regard to this life, does man go through something in this life where he is not able to die, but animals are? No. One doesn't have an advantage over the other one. All of them die. They may live different amounts of years, but they all die. So if you look at it, well, what's the advantage of being a man rather than being an animal? Isn't found there. Isn't found in the sense of a difference about the way that they live and have this animating spirit that is within them, something that gives that breath of life or that sense of life beginning. He said they all go to one place. Does that mean all dogs go to heaven? What does he mean by that? All go to one place.
Same thing.
All right. They all go to the grave. There's not any difference there. When they die, they're put in the grave. Now he says, who knows? The spirit of the sons of men goes up, the spirit of the animals down. Ever heard anybody come to your door and turn to that passage? You've had many Jehovah's Witnesses. You've heard that passage before. And their idea is, you know, people who are evil, you know, they're just like old dog Grover. When he's dead all over. You know, that's it. There's no soul that lives on. they'll use that one. Is that what that's talking about? No, it's talking about our physical life. Our physical life is there, and by looking at a man, do you see his spirit ascend to God? Does that mean it doesn't happen? No, it means you can't observe that in this world. Can you look at a dog die and see its spirit go down? No, you don't observe anything like that with men or with animals. You just observe they die. Now, what goes from that? So, I perceive that nothing is better than that man should rejoice in his own works, for that is his heritage. We have a little dog, and I don't want to say anything bad about our little dog because Glenita will kill me if I do. But our dog decides that biscuits are to be hoarded everywhere. Don't eat them, just put them there. You find them when you walk along the floor at night. And you wonder, why do you want that biscuit every single day? You're going to go put it over here, over there, or over here. You didn't enjoy it. Well, when you see people doing the same thing dogs do like that, you think, what's the purpose of that? If you're not going to enjoy what you've got and use those possessions that are there for some purpose, why do you want more and more and more of it? And so God is pointing out to man, there's nothing better than that as far as life under the sun. When you earn these things, recognize it's a gift of God, but recognize you don't just hoard them. You use them. That's what they're there. They're for your heritage to use through life. That's the sense. For who can bring him to see what will happen after him? Anybody? Anybody able to tell you what's going to take place after you? Doesn't matter what kind of supposed medium or seance deal there is, it's a bunch of malarkey. It's not true. The idea is what you do instead is you look at what is there in this life. You use the things of this life for what they're intended to in this life. Now, does that yet make me understand what my purpose is with God? No. But it's pointing that there must be something else. And that's this underlying current that keeps going on. All right, anything there? Go ahead, Larry.
So the very fact he's asking these questions is indicative of that. The very fact that he's asking these questions is indicative of him wondering.
Yes, that's right. It's what all of us want. It's a universal kind of thing. Doesn't matter where you are, they ask the same kind of question. That was one of the first things I recognized when I was going over into Lithuania and Belarus and all of that after the fall of the wall. Even though these people had been under communist domination for 70 years, they wondered the same thing that every other person does. There is something there that is causing them to reason and recognize there has to be a God. There has to be something beyond this. The official statement of communism was that God doesn't exist. They were officially atheistic. And yet, I found very, very, very few that were atheistic, even among communist leaders, those who had been in high power. I got to talk with several of them. They recognized there was a God as well. They were just empty because they knew nothing about it. Now, I'm going to go to chapter 4 at this. Oh, no, we're not. Let's do questions. I forgot about that. We looked at these first two. Number 3, what does Solomon call the gift of God in this passage? Okay. All right. Does that gift regard eternal or temporal things? Temporal things. All right. Then the next part is the phrase, I know that whatever God does, it shall be forever, used to describe God's action with regards to salvation and condemnation or other things. Which is the other things that are out there. It's not talking about salvation. That's what the Calvinists say, but that's not the context. If it refers to other things, what are those other things? What are they?
Things of this earth, things that He's created.
Okay. They keep going, right? If something is there, when you look at them, nobody could do better than God has. And yet they in themselves do not answer my purpose in life, nor do they provide for the things of what I'm ultimately looking for. All right? Number five. What does Solomon conclude about righteousness and wickedness in this world? When will ultimate justice be dispensed? What does he see about righteousness and wickedness in this world?
It's not fair.
All right. Where you ought to find the one, sometimes what do? Find the other. People talking about peace, peace, when there was no peace. They put darkness for light and light for darkness. Those kind of things you see all through the Old Testament Scripture. The point is, you don't have men doing that which is of perfect justice. Where is that dispensed? In the judgment, ultimately, is where you find that dispensed. Number six. How does Solomon say people and animals are alike in this life? They both what? Die. What conclusion does he reach from this fact?
We're the same.
Okay. Okay. There's something that looks beyond that and recognizes that can't be all there is. If they die just alike, and yet they've been made different with a longing for that which is eternal, a recognition by the things that they live in, that this has to be the result of an omnipotent, an omniscient God, the creation that surrounds us. Then we're pointed in the direction of we need to find the answer to our purpose in life, not in the things of life itself, but by seeking out that God. All right. That's where the passage that Jason brought up, Acts 17, God has always made it that if a man wants to know, what will he do? Seek and you shall knock and it be open to you. Those kind of things are there. If I'm seeking and wanting to know truth, God will make it possible for me to know that. In His providence, that's going to happen. All right, chapter 4. Might get through the first three verses. Then I returned and considered all the oppression that is done under the sun. And look, the tears of the oppressed. But they have no comforter. On the side of their oppressors, there's power. But they have no comforter. Therefore, I praised the dead who were already dead more than the living who are still alive, yet better than both is he who has never existed, who has not seen the evil work that is done under the sun. Now that sounds pretty pessimistic, doesn't it? What's the point? Is he right about that or is he just a prick? Well, you have to be right.
Life is as vain, empty, and useless as he claims that it is, then it's better not to have existed.
That's right. If this life is all there is, then are you going to be ultimately fulfilled in this life? Do you have anything that you can hope for? Because it's not anything that is guaranteed even if you do everything right. Where there should be justice, because here's somebody who's doing good, there's an oppressor that has the power. And they're going to cause that man to suffer and have a horrible kind of a life. Go ahead, Marie.
I was reminded of the scripture where it said, if we have only in this life we have hope, we are to be
pitied. All right. 1 Corinthians 15.
Yes.
Yeah. That idea of if the resurrection is not true and there's nothing besides this life, then it's something that has no purpose, no meaning, and no hope. But the idea that's there is pointing out, again, under the sun. I returned and considered all the oppression that is done under the sun. In this life, that's what happens. Look, the tears of the oppressed. They're oppressed, but do they have anyone to comfort them or give them satisfaction? Many times, no.
Not
All right? I can't help but put people's faces sometimes to these kind of things that I've seen. And the sorrow that is there as a part of life where someone's oppressed in it. When I look at some of these things of the injustice and the oppression that comes, I think about Willie, Pastor. In a prison, admittedly, what anybody would call in this country self-defense, woman coming after his mother with a machete, he had to stop her, he did, then he got put into prison. And in all of that, where's justice? And then as he'd go through, there are various things that were there. They were going to keep him in. Had somebody not been there to try and put pressure on those, even after he had been released by the government, he stayed in prison for almost a year. Where's the justice in that? How in the world does he get satisfaction with all of that? You don't in this country. You don't in that country. You don't in any country. In the end, there are injustices that take place. Now, that isn't so with just one set of people or another set of people. That's the way it is in this life. All of us look at things and we recognize in our own lifetimes, we've seen things happen that were not right, that were not just, in our case, or someone close to it. Now, what if we spend our life fretting about that injustice? What good's that going to do? I'm going to change the thing. So what's the only thing we can do? I think of Willie. But he spent his lifetime in that doing 7 years. He spent trying to bring people to Christ. And in the end, several hundred were baptized into Christ as a result of his work. Now, you want to make lemonade out of lemons, that's the way to do it. It's the idea of taking these things, recognizing this is what's going to happen in this life. I'm not going to fret about it. I'm not going to sit here and say, poor me. Go out and look for what's good that you can do. And if you want to know something, that's always with regard to spiritual things. That's the ultimate good. That's the only thing that gives you a sure hope because that has God behind it. Go ahead.
Question. Is it safe to say that we know what spiritual condition Solomon is in to see all this? I mean, I'm seriously asking because I enjoy life. And should I feel guilty? But I enjoy life because of the blessings I have and I know where they're coming from and I know what's to come and you know what I'm saying?
Well, that's what he said. We are to enjoy some of these things in life. However, your time will be there just like anybody else and has been, you know, at some point in your life where there are things that happen that are difficult, terribly difficult. I usually talk to people who say, well, you know, so-and-so's life is so tough, that's just because they aren't a good person. And I look at it and say, you wait. It could be that some of these things are down the line for you. I don't know. I hope not. But those kind of things are there. But the only thing that can give us lasting hope is not in the things of this world and what happens in this world. It's with regard to spiritual things. That's the only time that we have that kind of hope.
And God truly helps you get through those hard times.
Yeah, absolutely. Without Him, I don't know how you do it. Something else. Okay, Jason. So, Jason, then we'll go over here.
Gardens. so much further than a normal person would be able to get to that point. He's still left with, you know, a void.
Yeah.
So he's taking a lot of these views way out. That's what we can see in the writing too. That you know, we get these swings, these big swings. Yes, there's joy, but there's, you know, they're not as terrible, as empty.
And that's the dip. Like Scott said, you enjoy life. What you have to enjoy, you enjoy it. Don't feel guilty about that. That's what God gave it for. But that's still not going to answer the purpose that we have. If that's all you have, it's not much. Go ahead.
I'm just reminded of Lamentations, where we see the just real tough, difficult times. You know, verse 3, I'm the man who's seen afflicted by the rod. Remember my affliction, verse 19, the wormwood and the gall, how horrible it is. And then verse 20, my soul still remembers and sings within me. This I recall to mind. So what does he recall to mind? Therefore I have hope through the Lord's mercies we are not consumed. And so in the beginning there in Ecclesiastes 3, in the middle there, having gratitude that I have the opportunity to have God's mercies when I decide to devote myself to
Him. As Jeremiah there is pointing out in Lamentation, the just thing would have been what? For them to be totally destroyed.
To stay in the state
To just be wiped out. They had done evil. That's what God promised to them. But it's through His mercy that they were able to come back. He had provided for that within the law. Anything. Go ahead, DJ. Yeah, of worrying about I may not be poor, but somebody else might be.
Yeah.
Kind of a thing. That can happen, too. And, you know, you have a lot of those kind of people not recognizing what God has given them, but looking at the half-empty glass, if you will, kind of a thing in this life. Anybody else got anything there? Now, I thought I saw a hand over here. Anyway. Okay. When he talks about, therefore, I praise the ones that were already dead. When I looked at this, I was glad for people who are already dead. They don't have to go through any more of this stuff, the difficulties in life. Better than that, the one that never lived at all. Again, if what? If we're only considering life under the sun. I've had people who've asked me, you know, why did God create us? I didn't ask to be created, and yet He's going to punish me if I do evil. Well, what is that? That's starting at the wrong place. I don't use my finite mind to figure out the wisdom of God. It's unfathomable. What I do is start out and say, is there a God? I may not understand, and I do not understand everything that's a part of this life, the whys, wherefores, all of that. But I know that God is. And if I start there, that God is, then I look for what God says. And if I know God is, and this is what He says, then what's my place? I'm a finite man. I do the will of God. That's it. I can gripe about why it is that I was born or why I exist and I didn't ask for this. What good does that do? When I look at the book of Revelation and see heaven described, if you have kind of a question about why do I have to go through this? Why do I have to be one who's self-controlled in all of this in this life? I think about heaven, and I think, you know, the first 30 seconds we're in heaven, I doubt any of that matters to us at all. If God gives us the opportunity to be in a place that was for Him for all eternity. Has He given us something better than we deserve if we lived all of our life right? Yeah, far better. What we need to do is not think and center in our place on our doubts of what our own wisdom would lead us to. What we need to do is understand what He talks about. If I'm looking at this life, it's going to get me to thinking about that. Yet what do I do to get control of those kind of thoughts and stop doubting God? Think about what I know. When you start with what you know, then you go to the doubts of what you don't know. But when you start with your doubts of what you don't know and what your thoughts are and how things in this life just don't answer at all, you're starting at what we were already told was the wrong place. We've got to start on the other end of that. Okay. Well, appreciate your attention and being here. Rick, if you'll lead us in a closing word of prayer.